Can a symposium really help the FAA and the industry reform pilot training? I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Doug Stewart, who, besides being the 2004 National CFI of the Year, is the chairman of the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators, which can be found at www.safepilots.org. One of the things we want to talk about in some depth today is the Pilot Training Reform Symposia being held in a few weeks in Atlanta by SAFE. And I shouldn't maybe, Doug, maybe I shouldn't say by SAFE. SAFE is putting this together, but you've got a bunch of very interesting people from the industry on board with this. Welcome in and tell us a little bit about what this event is intended to accomplish.
I think the best thing to do is mention how the idea of the symposium came to be in the first place. During Air Venture this past summer, the FAA Administrator, Randy Babbitt, in his Meet the Administrator meeting, mentioned, amongst other things, that the FAA was having a very difficult time addressing what appeared to be a flatline fatal accident rate. And he confessed that the FAA was kind of at their wits' end in how to deal with it, and that they were really looking for help from the industry to do this. Well, Bob Wright, who is a SAFE member and was the manager of AFS 800, which is General Aviation and Commercial Aviation of the FAA, he and I were chatting in the SAFE tent after Randy Babbitt's talk, and saying we felt that we could put together a symposium and bring together all of industry to try and create a true coalition of the entire general aviation industry to address not only the fatal accident rate, but student retention, student starts, as well as aircraft sales and all the ancillary services and goods that come along with aircraft sales. And the reason we felt we needed to do this is that the flight instructor is the fulcrum point for changing all of this. We felt that there is a great need to change the way we are doing flight training in this country today. If we could change the way we are doing flight training, we could fix the problems of student retention, of student starts, definitely of the fatal accident rate. And if all of these things improve, well, it becomes a no-brainer. Then, therefore, aircraft sales will go up, as well as all the ancillary goods and services. That's where it all starts.
There's a couple of leaps of logic in there that I want you to walk me through. One is that, first of all, the premise that student retention rate is the problem. When I look at other businesses and I look at people walking in the door versus walking out with a successful transaction, we don't look so bad.
We have about a 70% attrition rate right now, 70 to 80% attrition rate. I think that's pretty poor.
I guess that would be, maybe my analogy is off, because that would be the equivalent of somebody buying the product and 70% being dissatisfied.
I don't know whether we're talking about buying a product here. We're talking about someone starting an endeavor with a discretionary income. Mind you, you know, they're leaving this and going and buying a boat or going and buying a great big RV or whatever it might be. People who start flight training are not staying with it, and it's because the quality of the instruction, for the most part. It's not the only reason, but the quality of the instruction needs to be improved. The quality of the service that these people get needs to be improved.
Okay, let's latch onto that one for a moment. If that is an issue, there's a lot of very professional instruction going on out there, and then there's an awful lot of Part 61 guys who are doing it part time or maybe just to keep their hand in it, who aren't keeping up with current trends. You know, who you could ask them about scenario based training, and they'd say, "What is that?" And I mean, that sounds cruel, but it's true. How do you turn around an industry that has instructors at so many different levels of commitment?
Hey, there are many ways of turning this around, but I do kind of take a little bit of offense of what you say, because all the training that I provide is Part 61. And there are many people of my ilk who are only working under Part 61. Part 141 does not necessarily guarantee quality.
No, but
I'll just say that from the very outset.
I can guarantee you, though, that if you stop by the little airport with the guy who's only instructing 50 hours a year, he will be Part 61. That was my intent, not to denigrate all Part 61 instruction.
I do not disagree with you. I think there's poor instruction not only in 61 but 141 as well. Okay, but the way we change this, and this is really where your question was leading to, is not through regulation, but if we change three major parts of the flight training industry, being doctrine, that being the guidance pretty much from the FAA on how we're supposed to do things, the handbooks, the airplane flying handbook, the pilot's handbook of aeronautical knowledge, the instrument flying handbook, the instrument procedures handbook. If we change all these handbooks and bring them up to speed, now an endeavor was made 2-3 years ago within the FAA to improve these, and they were improved somewhat, but there's still more work to be done there. So if we improve doctrine, if we increase the standards, we make the knowledge test a more viable, a more real test that tests not just rote learning, but actual correlation and understanding. Changing our standards through the practical tests, through the knowledge tests, and then changing curriculum. Now, curriculum can be changed by the FAA under the 141 schools, but if we get the Part 61 schools to understand what is going on and upgrade their curriculum so that they have syllabi that are really workable, that incorporate scenario-based training, by changing these three areas, doctrine, standards, and curriculum, we can make this improvement.
More with Safe's Doug Stewart in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through performance. At Cirrus, performance is not simply the measurement of a single design parameter. Rather, it's a total package. It's optimum balance of speed, efficiency, comfort, safety, ease of flight, and quality. We call it Cirrus Flying 2.0. Aren't you ready to feel the freedom?
Piperjet.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the ANN Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, talking today with Doug Stewart of the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators about the upcoming Pilot Training Reform Symposium, scheduled for May 4th and 5th in Atlanta. I'm going to guess that going into this, you must have, on the Doug Stewart personal list, a few things you'd like to see. Can you give us an example of something that could be changed in any of those areas that you think would make a difference in either retention or the safety of general aviation?
The area where I see it most is in teaching our teachers, in teaching our instructors. And this is where curriculum needs to be changed, not so much in changing the curriculum. Certainly the curriculum for the new student pilot needs to be changed, but the curriculum needs to be changed for the instructors. This is the first place the change has to be made. Instructors come out of quite often a template-driven way of learning. To be very honest, I personally think that the collegiate system leads to this. They create templates within their syllabi, and instructors come out of this really with very little learning. Their learning doesn't start until they start instructing, but quite often at this point, they're not ready to learn. They don't want to learn. They're only there because they want to move on to the airline.
One of the observations that I think is an interesting one about this industry is that if you want to take up scuba diving or any kind of high-end academic learning, you're going to be learning from someone who has been vetted through a career, the most trained, most experienced, most knowledgeable person you can find in that endeavor. Whereas in flight training, you got guys killing time to get to the regionals.
Exactly. That's a major problem that we have there. But again, if we can train our instructors, train them not only in stick and rudder techniques, but start to bring them on board to understand the importance of incorporating scenario-based training into their training. As an example, as an examiner, every private pilot has to be tested in their practical test on instrument flying. And quite often, in fact, with me on every practical test, my applicant will, you know, I'll say, okay, I have the controls, and go ahead and put your hood on. They put the hood on. I say, okay, you have the controls, and they take over. And I say, let's just fly straight and level, and I'll, you know, whatever heading we're on, here's your assigned heading and your assigned altitude, and let's just maintain this heading and altitude. And yeah, I'm waiting to see, do they have a scan, or are they okay with it? And then I turn to them and say, of course, they don't see me turning. They got the hood on, but I say, okay, we've just run into the clouds. What are you going to do now? And you would be surprised how many applicants who come to me for a practical test have never given this a thought.
Now, is this a private, are you talking about a private practical test where the correct answer would be get out of the clouds?
The correct answer would be yes, get out of the clouds some way, you know, a 180, a climb, hopefully not a descent, because cumulogranite hurts a lot more than cumulonimbus, mm-hmm. but tell me something. And it's like no one has ever asked this question of them. It's just told, fly straight and level, okay, do a 180 to the left, okay, do a 180 to the right, climb, descend, boom, we're done.
Well,
this is the way people are being trained. Rather than being trained in a scenario situation where if you get in the clouds, what are you going to do? What are the dangers of descending versus climbing? What are the advantages of climbing versus descending? The point that I'm trying to drive home here is that pilots are not being trained this way.
Mm-hmm.
They're just being trained to a practical test standard. Here's the standard. You have to fly plus or minus 100 feet, plus or minus 10 knots, plus or minus 10 degrees. No thinking about it. No correlation. No understanding.
Okay, there is going to always be some debriefing that goes on in the student community after someone comes back from a successful checkride or an unsuccessful checkride. How do you write a practical test standard that accounts for the differences in various parts of the country or the differences in scenarios that would have to be created to do this kind of testing?
Okay. An attempt has been made in the current instrument practical test. There is actually a matrix there to give the examiner tools to evaluate those kind of subjective areas relative to decision-making. So the start has been made. There is guidance out there. It's hard. You know, it's a subjective thing. It's not a hard and fast. You know, it's easy to say you just busted a heading by 12 degrees. You were limited to 10 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
But it requires also a change in the mindset of many examiners.
All right. Now, John King made a big point at your offsite press conference during AOPA Summit. He made a very dramatic poll of those in the room, which demonstrated the impact, the potential impact of the fatal accident rate on new starts. Because obviously, if everybody in the room knows someone who has died in a general aviation accident, that suggests that there's an awful lot of people who will be afraid of it out there, you know, at the level of before they get into it. How big a difference can we make, and how long would that difference take to make if we were able to turn this ship around?
I'd like to say tomorrow, but let's be realistic. These changes are going to take years to happen. I don't know that I'll live long enough to see all the changes happen that I would like to see occur. But it's time to start now. One of the analogies that I use is that we are in a spiral dive, not a spin. General aviation is in a spiral dive. We are accelerating. I think you and I spoke about this before in another interview.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, every time somebody rolls an airplane up in a ball, just earlier this week, or I guess at this point it's been a little more than a week ago, a pilot showing off, watch this, in his BAC strike fighter, of which he had 20 hours, showing off to his buddies, turned his strike fighter into, well, it wasn't a lawn dart, it became a water bomb. He drove the cockpit right through the ice of the frozen Hudson River. Darwin Award, you know. But how many people read about that accident within a 200-mile radius of where I am and perhaps were thinking about starting flight training and saying, I don't know. I don't know if I want to do this. Maybe golf is a little bit safer.
Tomorrow, in the conclusion of this conversation, Doug explains exactly how the symposium will work and how it will help the FAA do its part in reforming pilot training. Doug Stewart is chairman of SAFE, the Society of Aviation and Flight Educators. Find out more at safepilots.org. The dedicated website for the Pilot Training Reform Symposium is pilottrainingreform.org. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.